Hello, fellow movie fans. I'm Lily Percy, and I'll be your guide this week as I talk with writer Samantha Powell about the movie that changed her life, Bridget Jones' Diary. If you haven't seen the movie, don't worry, we're going to give you all the details you need in order to follow along, and hopefully you'll be quoting the movie in no time at all.
When I was young, I never needed
When I think about Bridget Jones' Diary, I think about Renee Zellweger sitting alone in her apartment on New Year's, listening to Celine Dion, Sad FM. I think about all the feelings of loneliness and the idea that you're going to die alone, eaten by dogs.
I suddenly realized that unless something changed soon, I was going to live a life where my major relationship was with a bottle of wine. And I'd finally die fat and alone and be found 3 weeks later, half-eaten by wild dogs. Or I was about to turn into Glenn Close in Fatal Attraction.
All by myself.
Bridget Jones' Diary is about a woman named Bridget Jones who is struggling in her early 30s to find a man, to find out who she is in her own life, to find a career that really satisfies her and challenges her and actually exhibits the gifts that she has. And she's doing all of this while living in London and navigating the publishing world, which is where she currently works, with the very dashing but very dirty Daniel Cleaver.
If walking past office was attempt to demonstrate presence of skirt, can only say that it has failed parlously. Cleave.
Shut up, please. I'm very busy and important. P.S. How dare you sexually harass me in this impertinent manner?
Message Jones. Mortified to have caused offence. Will avoid all non-PC overtones in future. Deeply apologetic. P.S. Like your tits in that top.
While she's flirting with Daniel Cleaver, she meets the man of her dreams, Mark Darcy. And appropriately named Mark Darcy, because the whole movie is kind of a play on Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice. And in fact, Mark Darcy is played by Colin Firth, who many of us swooned over in the BBC adaptation of Pride and Prejudice.
How's it look?
Great. It's, blue.
Blue?
No, but blue is good. If you ask me, there isn't enough blue food.
Oh, shit. It must have been the string.
No, it's string soup.
Oh, God, they're going to be here any minute.
Well, don't worry, I'm sure they've come to see you and not to orange parfait and sugar cages. Just have a drink.
Yes.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
I relate to Bridget Jones so much because of how imperfect she is, how flawed she is, and how she wears those flaws on her sleeve. She is loved and loving. She loves her family and her family loves her. And she loves her friends and they love her back. And she has a great life. And those imperfections don't hold her back from that.
Have we got the most fantastic surprise for you?
No, you're not going to sing.
Not that fantastic, sadly, no, but still pretty good. We've decided we're going to take you to Paris for the weekend so you can forget about everything, particularly forget about Mark Darcy.
I can't believe you said what you said you said.
I know.
There goes my invite to the Darcys next year.
If he didn't leap over the family heirlooms and whip you up in his arms, then sod him.
Yes, he's clearly the most dreadful cold fish.
Exactly. I mean, there's been all these bloody hints and stuff, but has he ever actually stuck his fucking tongue down your fucking throat?
No. Not once.
Well, I think we should pack, shouldn't we? If I take that room, you
passport,
the idea that you don't have to be perfect to be accepted or loved is something that really struck Samantha Powell. She's a writer who writes about fashion and pop culture. And Bridget Jones entered her life at a time when she really needed someone to remind her that her own imperfections made her who she was. So tell me what memories came up for you when you were thinking about the first time that you saw Bridget Jones' Diary and where you were and how old you were and all of the things that were going on when you first saw it.
Well, I remember it actually really well because it was the spring of my senior year of high school. Mm. The movie came out in April.
2001, right?
Yep, 2001. And I was going to be turning 18 soon and then I was going to graduate from high school and that felt like obviously very momentous, two very big things happening very close together.
Yeah.
And I remember loving it immediately. I had read the book already, so I knew, obviously, the basic outline of the story, and I had also read Pride and Prejudice and watched the Colin Firth BBC Pride and Prejudice. Oof. Like, this was a story that I knew.
Yes, yes. The lake jumping scene, and that, let's not go down there. We'll just get too hot and bothered. Yeah.
So I wasn't, like, expecting to be surprised. It wasn't a movie I went to with that in mind. But I just remember really enjoying myself, really liking Bridget's London apartment and thinking it was very cool and adult. And all of her friends, and like thinking, this is the kind of life that I'd like to have as an adult.
Because 32, which is the age she is at the time in the movie, seems so far away at that age.
Yeah, it seemed like a lifetime away. that idea. And I think partly because of seeing it at that age, Bridget seemed pretty put together to me at that time.
Whoa, that's saying a lot, considering what a mess she is.
a little messy. Yeah,
but still, she has a job. She's able to pay her rent.
She has an apartment. Like, yeah. She dates people.
She has food. I was like, she's able to afford drinks and food. This seems like a good life.
Right, exactly. And so I think then watching it years later, as I got closer and closer to the age that Bridget was in it, I was like, oh, wait a minute. Right.
Yeah. In your piece about Bridget Jones' Diary, you know, you write about the role it's played in your life, and you wrote something that really rang true for me, that really stayed with me. So I just want to read it back to you, if you don't mind.
Of course.
He wrote, "When I daydreamed about my impending adulthood, which I did constantly in those last months of high school, it always featured the same things, the perfect husband, perfect house, and perfect children. But I had also decided that before I could attain any of that, I needed to become the perfect me. I kept in my head a running list of all of my shortcomings, both small and large, to be handled, wrangled, and pushed deep down. My constant striving for perfection was unhealthy, but my bigger problem was my belief that happiness was intrinsically tied to it, that I would suddenly have the happiness I lacked if only I could finally attain perfection." You know, I never looked at Bridget Jones' Diary with that lens in mind, yet that's totally exactly what this movie's about. That's what Bridget is doing, right? She's trying to achieve perfection in order to attain happiness. And then by the end, it's like she realizes that only if she accepts herself, you know, will she actually get happiness? And I just wonder, you know, first of all, what had shaped this idea of happiness that you had at the time in your own personal life? And then how did watching this movie kind of change the way you looked at perfection and happiness?
So I went to a girls' school in Boston. I'd been there since fifth grade. So at that point, almost 8 years. And I think, and it was a very competitive environment. I learned a lot. It was wonderful educationally, but I think that I felt this need to have everything about it be perfect. Perfect grades. And then after you got perfect grades, you graduated and you went to a top tier school, and there was just felt like there was like a weight of being a woman, a young woman who went to this school and got this education, and that part of being happy was like being this certain type of person. And I think that was part of it. For me, there was an extra level there because it was a predominantly white institution and I was a young Black girl. So for me, there was an extra level of like needing to be perfect because I already felt somewhat out of place.
And what did happiness look like for you? Like, could you even say what that was at the time?
I think it was a very vague concept that included very cliched steps. So go to college at that time, then go to medical school immediately, become a doctor, meet a guy, get married at around 28.
Yeah.
And like have a couple of kids.
Which actually is just like Bridget, right? Like she doesn't feel like until she has the husband, you know, has the certain career, has the certain weight, right? Because that's the other big thing. Until, you know, she achieves these things, she won't ever actually be happy.
Resolution number one.
Ooh.
Obviously, we'll lose 20 pounds. Number two, always put last night's panties in the laundry basket. Equally important,
We'll find nice, sensible boyfriend to go out with and not continue to form romantic attachments to any of the following. Alcoholics, workaholics, commitment phobics, peeping toms, megalomaniacs, emotional fuckwits, or perverts. And especially will not fantasize about a particular person who embodies all these things.
I feel like she gets the new job and she leaves her old job. And the new job isn't any better.
No, because it's still her, right?
Right.
Yeah.
She thought it would be better and it wasn't. I think it was about what I liked about it was like finding happiness where you are. It's part of the reason why I didn't like the sequels.
Yeah, no kidding. Because that focus was taken away from them.
Right. Right. And when Mark gives his big, you know, I like you just the way you are speech, where basically he lists flaws, which the flip side of that speech in the actual Austen novel is just like Elizabeth doesn't take it well.
Yeah.
It's just negative. It's a negative thing before she yells at him, basically.
Yeah.
Saying she would never marry him. But in this, they take it and they make it into a romantic overture that has weight and isn't negative, where like it confuses her, because I think she assumed that for any man to like her, he couldn't see all of those things about herself that she assumed were bad.
Yeah.
So it made her reevaluate how she felt about herself. It's not the best that it took like a man saying this to her for her to come to that realization, but someone had to say it and no one else around her was going to say it. Obviously not her mother.
Yeah, no kidding.
And the thing is that it's not like he says it and then suddenly she's like, this is the man for me. It takes like a slow realization of that as well, which I also thought felt realistic to me.
Yeah.
Like she had to think about herself and she had to think about like what that meant about how she felt about him.
I don't think you're an idiot at all. I mean, there are elements of the ridiculous about you. Your mother's pretty interesting. And you really are an appallingly bad public speaker. And you tend to let whatever's in your head come out of your mouth without much consideration of the consequences. I realized that when I met you at the turkey curry buffet that I was unforgivably rude and wearing a reindeer jumper that my mother had given me the day before. But the thing is, what I'm trying to say very inarticulately is I like you very much.
Apart from the smoking and the drinking and the vulgar mother and the verbal diarrhea.
No, I like you very much, just as you are.
And I think she had to also really actually evaluate what she really wanted, right? Because one of the things about the Daniel Cleaver character played by Hugh Grant is that he's such a stereotype of all the things we're supposed to want, right? He's good looking and he's like, you know, sexy and he's her boss, which also has its own like illicit attraction. But he's got money and yet she can't really realize that she wants Mark Darcy until she goes through all of that with him.
The thing is, with Lara and me, well, you know,
no, you'll have to fill me in.
Well, the truth is, we're the same, Bridge, you and me. You know, we're two people of a certain age looking for the moment to commit and finding it really hard. And I just think that in the end, it's got to be something, you know, extraordinary, something which makes us go that extra mile. And I think Lara and, I don't know, being American or something to do with confidence and being so, well, young, you know.
So I'm just curious because I know that the first time you saw this movie, this wasn't what you first realized, right? This kind of profound depth did not come across as a 17-year-old. And I just wonder, when did that change for you? Like, when did you start looking at Bridget Jones' Diary in this new light with this kind of very deep sense of the lesson of imperfection and search for happiness?
I think it would probably be in my late 20s. And I think a lot of that had to do with I'd been laid off from a job during like the Great Recession and was living in New York and tried to make that work for as long as I could before I had to move back home to Boston. And I think at that point, I felt like nothing was going right. And I felt like a lot of the reasons things weren't going right was because there was something wrong with me. Hmm. And I think just watching it and realizing that you could be an imperfect person and change in little ways, but like at the core still be the same person and find some happiness. I guess I needed to see something like that. And I, seeing it in something that I felt familiar with and suddenly like realizing that when watching it, like it took things being bad for me to realize what the movie was actually telling me, I think.
Bridget?
I want to hear this. Because if she gives one inch, I'm going to fire her bony little bottom anyway for being totally spineless. What?
Well, I just think you should know that,
Simon.
You know, there are lots of prospects here for a talented
Daniel,
boss.
We...
Yeah, just give me a minute, will you, Simon? Thanks.
Right-ho, boss man.
Lots of prospects for a person who, you know, perhaps for personal reasons has been slightly overlooked professionally.
Thank you, Daniel. That is very good to know. But if staying here means working within 10 yards of you, frankly, I'd rather have a job wiping Saddam Hussein's arse.
Yeah, it's amazing. I've thought a lot about Bridget Jones and like why it is that she's so relatable, but I think it's because there's something in the performance that Renee Zellweger brings that just feels so human and also just so like lovable and accessible. Like I still feel like she's me, I'm her, like that never, I never doubt that.
Right.
And it's amazing, especially to me, considering I'm a Hispanic woman and you're a Black woman and yet we both related to this blonde white lady. So it says something about the writing.
Right, exactly.
So speaking of the writing, you know, Bridget Jones, I think another thing that I love apart from the character of Bridget Jones is the dialogue, right? Like there's so many quotable lines. And I mean, you already quoted one of my favorites from Mark Darcy, you know, which is the, I like you very much just as you are, because I mean, you can't get better than that. But I also love like all the silly lines that Bridget says, like I often will use in my own life really inappropriately, the Bridget Jones, wanton sex goddess with a very bad man between her thighs. I just wonder, like, what are your favorite scenes, the scenes that you always go back to or the lines of dialogue that you kind of play over and over in your head?
There's a scene where she's prepping for the book party and she's in a restaurant with her trio of friends.
How to introduce people properly.
I can't quote it yeah. because it's pretty vulgar, but it's hilarious.
Introduce people with thoughtful details, such as Sheila, this is Daniel. Daniel, this is Sheila. Sheila enjoys horse riding and comes from New Zealand. Daniel enjoys publishing and comes...
All over your face?
Exactly.
So good.
Also, that felt very real. Like, it's just them having this conversation and making all of these off-color jokes.
So true.
And not actually giving her any good advice.
At all. Like, she's totally unprepared now for this party. I love the blue soup cooking scene, I gotta tell you.
Ugh. Yes, I love that as well.
But I love that she's so vulnerable with him in that moment, right? Because she wants to impress her friends with the food that she's making. And then Mark Darcy shows up at her door and now she's got to impress him. And she's kind of a mess. And she has this blue soup because she used blue string to tie together. I can't even remember what was in the soup, but it's disgusting.
I think it was leeks.
Leeks. Oh, yeah. No. That's just a great scene. And it's another way where we see like that comedy and vulnerability tied together, right? Like it's,
yeah.
They're laughing together, but they're also sharing this really vulnerable moment.
I think it's the first scene where we see Mark smile.
Oh, yeah.
Which I understand, one, he's supposed to be, that's part of the character, is that we're not supposed to know that he has this like warmth and inner depth, and that comes out later. But I think also because they were trying to mask the, you don't, if you see Colin Firth's dimples when he smiles, it's very distracting.
Oh my God, yeah. You can't pay attention to anything else.
No.
And
so
also
they waited
then,
until the end.
Yeah,
to pull
exactly.
them out.
And also then we wouldn't be able to even look at Hugh Grant as anything attractive because you're like, once the dimples are out, that's it.
No contest.
No contest.
Mmm, delicious. I have to say, to me, this is the most incredible shit.
This is the worst of the three.
It does actually remind me of something. It tastes like
marmalade.
Well, Bambridge, 4 hours of careful cooking and a feast of blue soup, omelette and marmalade.
Thank you.
I think that deserves a toast, don't you? To Bridget, who cannot cook, but who we love, just as she is.
To Bridget,
just as she is.
How have you come to accept yourself, you know, as Bridget did toward the end of the film? Do you feel like you're getting closer to that?
I think I'm closer to it. It's a learning process.
Yes. Some days are better than others, let's be honest.
But I think I'm much better in that regard than I was at any point in my 20s.
That's huge.
Yeah, it is. It's been one of the best parts of my 30s is being better at that. At, like, forgiving myself and understanding that I don't have to be perfect before my life can actually happen. It took me a while to learn that, but I have learned it for the most part.
Samantha Powell is a writer and prolific tweeter. She writes about fashion, movies, and books, and her work has appeared at Complex, The Cut, and Racked. She has dreams of one day writing a book about the history of the handshake, and you can find her work at SamanthaDPowell.com. Next time, we're going to be talking about the Pixar classic Toy Story. If for some reason you haven't seen it, or you just want to revisit it so that it's fresh in your mind for our conversation, you've got 2 weeks to check it out. You can find it on all of the usual streaming sites or at your local library. Remember, libraries are cool and free. This Movie Changed Me is produced by Maya Tarrell, Chris Hegel, Marie Sambalay, and Tony Lee Yu, and is an On Being Studios production. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find your podcasts. And if you get a chance, leave us a review. Shout out this week to Nurse Koopy for their review. We are your people, and you're always welcome in our movie-loving club. I'm Lily Percy. Because that is my name.